And I said to myself, you know, I'm all right turning 40 and I'm all right being fat, but I'm not all right being fat and 40.
Dizruns Radio episode 621 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Dizruns Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode of the show, just want to take a quick second and let you know that Dizruns Radio is once again supported by my good friends over at DKMS, that international organization that is working to do everything they can to solve the world's blood cancer and blood disorder problem. As I've said before, as I'll say again, cancer is one of those things that's touched a lot of us, probably all of us, in one form or another. And I feel like blood cancer is one of those types of cancers that at least in the circles that I've, lived in and run in and been a part of here in the United States, kind of flies underneath the surface a little bit. Yet there's scores of people that are battling blood cancer, family members, other blood disorders, things like that, that, in a lot of cases, the best chance for, beating the cancer and living a healthy life, cancer free, is a bone marrow transplant, so that get some healthy bone marrow, helps the body reproduce healthy cells, and ultimately that leads to survival. And what DKMS does is they help to find those healthy donors, those folks that are willing to give a little bit of themselves to give the possibility of a life-saving treatment to somebody who's battling blood cancer or other blood disorders. And that's why I'm so excited to have DKMS on board as a partner, as a sponsor, as a supporter of the show. And I'm so thankful that so many of you have taken up, been willing to join me in the pool of potential donors, of people who are willing to be able to help somebody potentially save their life. It's a really cool thing when you stop and think about it, and it doesn't cost you anything but a couple minutes of your time to get yourself in the pool. And then if you end up being a genetic match, it only takes, it's not a big long process. You're not going to be out of running for weeks or months or things like that. A couple of days, a little bit of soreness, and before long you're right back at it, no worse for the wear, and potentially you save somebody's life. So if you're willing to join me in the pool, will you do it? DKMS.org is the website. All the information is there. You can get your free swab kit to get yourself tested, or get them the sample to they can, then break down the DNA information and put you into the computer, into the system, and potentially be a match. And you can also text the word amazing. That's AMAZING to 50555 for more information and to get signed up there as well. So thank you again to DKMS for their support. And thank you guys for supporting a cause, an organization, a group doing some really good work in this world. So thank you for your support of DKMS. And now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that I honestly don't know that much about going into our chat, but clearly that will change by the time all is said and done with us today. Among other titles, according to his Twitter bio at least, today's guest is a gadget geek, a fitness enthusiast, a tech evangelist, an OCR guy, and a zombie invader. So pretty sure that gives us plenty of avenues of things to discuss today. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Rob Wowald to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And guys, if during the course of the conversation, you're like, gosh, this guy sounds pretty cool, which I think is probably what's going to happen, you can check him out on the internets and on the social medias. The website, rowald.net, that's R-O-W-A-L-D, which is the last name, .net. And on all things social, you can find Rob at The Urban Squatch, The Urban, U-R-B-A-N-S-Q-U-A-T-C-H, like Sasquatch, only a couple characters short, The Urban Squatch on all things social media. And as per usual, we'll have things linked up in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/621. So, Rob, the way we always start off the show every episode, it's the one thing that, probably the only thing that hasn't changed since day one of the show, but it's with the same simple question that for some folks, it's a pretty easy one to answer. And for some folks, it can be a little bit tricky trying to nail it down, but it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
My favorite distance to race is actually half marathons. I find that the commitment that's involved with doing a half marathon for training wise isn't overly taxing, and the amount of time that you're actually out running, for me anyway, is for a race is usually right around the 2 hour mark. So it's not like a giant chunk of my day is gone. Like if I do a full marathon, you know, the fastest I've ever done a full is 4 hours and 36 minutes. So that's a big chunk of your day gone. Whereas with a half marathon, I can go out and start a race at 7, be done by 9, and be at home playing on my computer by 9:30.
Right. And then you're not hobbling around for several days after the fact, at least not as probably not quite as bad. A little soreness after a good hard half marathon, but not quite the same level.
Yeah. Definitely nowhere near. I mean, I can go out and run a half marathon the next day, go out and run again if I really wanted to. So.
Right. How'd you get into running? How'd you get into this sport that everybody listening here knows and loves so much? Everybody's got such a unique story. How'd you find your way into it?
Sure. About 7 years ago, I was 39 and I weighed 400 pounds. And I said to myself, you know, I'm all right turning 40 and I'm all right being fat, but I'm not all right being fat and 40. So I started exercising, and when I first started, I couldn't run for more than 30 seconds at a time. I thought, I don't know how people run. People who run are crazy. And then I started getting a little more into it and more into it, and started on a treadmill. And I got up to where I did my first 5K on a treadmill, and I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then I started doing some local races in the town that I lived in at the time. And then, you know, from there, it's just like an infection. Mm-hmm. You do a 5K. Well, now I got to try and do a 10K. Well, I've done a 10K. Well, now I got to try and do a half marathon. You know how it goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You start down that slippery slope and you can't almost can't get off, which isn't necessarily a bad thing by any stretch.
Yeah. And what's funny is I got into OCR as it was my reward. Mm-hmm. After I lost 185 pounds, I was like, well, now I feel confident enough that I can go try this. So I started doing OCR, and I found I really enjoy running through the mud and climbing over obstacles.
Gotcha. I want to get into the OCR stuff a bit more, because that's still an avenue that I haven't gone down yet. It intrigues me, and every time I talk to somebody that prefers OCRs, or at least, you know, gets into some of the obstacle course racing thing, I love picking the brain and you know, having you peer pressure me just a little bit more to take the next step towards jumping into my first mud run. But rewinding back to when you first got started,
sure.
What was it that pushed you in the direction of running? Because there's any number of things, you know, you could have taken up swimming, you could have taken up cycling, you could have whatever. There's a half a dozen or more than that
right.
options that were out there. What was the thing that got you to running?
Well, at the time I was living in the Midwest, I was living in Rockford, Illinois, and in the wintertime, you can't really do a whole lot of swimming and biking because right. there's so much snow. And I was at the gym and they had treadmills. So I was like, all right. So I started on the treadmill, you know, soon discovered that I really do not like treadmills. I will run outside if it's negative 20 degrees over running on a treadmill if I'm given the choice.
Yeah, you get no arguments from me here. I have the opposite problem. Living in Florida, that is, you know, it's going to be 85, 95 degrees, something like that, and still, yeah, it's either an unplanned off day or just going to suffer through the heat and humidity before I'll take it inside and get on the treadmill.
Right. Well, you know, and I'm a glutton for punishment, obviously, because this year I moved to Canada, where right. you know, everyone knows where it's a hotbed of running activity in the winter because it's so warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get that layer of snow. It kind of insulates things a little bit sometimes. Almost makes it feel a little bit warmer.
Yeah, actually, where I moved to in Canada isn't much different from where I moved from. I mean, it's gotcha. It's maybe 100 miles north of where I live. So the winter is going to be about the same.
Right. And people that have listened long enough have probably heard me mention this once or twice, but I grew up in northern Michigan. So I am familiar with proper winter and also familiar with that, you know, there are parts in plenty of places in the United States that are farther north than some of the places in southern Ontario, part of Canada. So, you know,
right.
very, very well that, you know, you'll get kind of that Midwestern still winter with where you are now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the entire state of Minnesota is farther north than I am in Canada. So,
right. So, you know, talking about the OCRs and for people that aren't as familiar, obstacle course racing. So it's your Tough Mudders, your warrior dashes, things like that. There's a whole host of different options out there, different events that you can run, different distances, the whole nine yards. But you said that you got into the OCR scene as a bit of a reward after you had lost a bunch of weight and gotten your health to the point where you felt that was something you could do. When did that seed get planted? So, you know, you said, I think it was about 180, 185 pounds before you did it. When did you kind of set that as the benchmark of something that you were interested in trying?
When I successfully ran a 10K race, one of the local road races, without stopping. I was like, well, if I can run this, why can't I try doing the obstacle courses? So I started with a small goal. I did a warrior dash, which, you know, is like 5 to 7K. They're not real long. And that was my goal. Okay, if I can run a full 10K, then I should be able to complete an obstacle course, because I figured it would take me about the same amount of time to do a 5K obstacle course as it would a 10K road race. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was something, you know, and I was up for challenging myself at the time. I was like, okay, if I want to add to this challenge, this is what I want to try and do to make my life better.
Gotcha. Do you feel like I felt, I've never done an obstacle course race. So this is me totally speaking without knowing exactly what it's like. But I feel like you could almost have done it the other way around, where it was like, if you could do sort of the distance of an obstacle course race, you could probably handle the obstacle course race, because it's not running the whole way. You run for a little bit, then you kind of, you know, you stop, you work different muscles. You're doing something different to climb over a barrier or to crawl through the mud or whatever it is that particular obstacle has to be. Did you find it to be that way? Or did you find that having a bit more of a running base really helped with navigating the obstacles and completing the obstacle course challenges?
For me, having the running base really helped, because I was, you know, I was still heavy at the time. When I did the first warrior dash, I mean, I still weighed 340 pounds at the time. So I was still a pretty big guy. And I, you know, pulling myself up the obstacles was a lot of work and getting through the obstacles, but I found having that running base, I had the endurance that I could just get off the obstacle and I could start running at full bore again, because you never had to run more than, you know, like a kilometer between obstacles. So I could run full bore to the next obstacle, then use different muscles getting over it. And by the time I got over the obstacle, I was ready to run again. So, I mean, having the running base, I think, really helped me get through the non-obstacle portions of the obstacle course.
Gotcha. What is your favorite, you know, kind of almost harkening back to the first question, what is your favorite distance or type or maybe both? I don't know. Again, I don't know all of the vernacular here, but when it comes to obstacle course racing, where seems to be your bread and butter?
My favorite obstacle course race is the Savage Race. It's put on multiple venues around the United States. I'm not sure if they do any up here in Canada or not. But it's 4 to 7 miles, and there's usually 25 to 30 obstacles. Mm. So it's not overly taxing, but it's still a good challenge. And it's timed, but and they have heats where people can run for prize money and stuff like that. But in the open heats, it's really more about camaraderie than it is about getting the best time. Unless you're just out there to get your own PR or whatever, mm. You know, you'll find that people will stop and help you. And I really like, that's one of the things I really like about the OCR scene, is all the camaraderie. Tough Mudder is probably my absolute favorite obstacle course race, not for lengthwise, but just because it's untimed and it's not about time. It's about overcoming the challenges and helping other people overcome their challenges.
Yeah, that's something that I've definitely heard across, you know, across the different times I've chatted with folks that are more into the OCR scene, is that it really is. And especially, I feel like they've said it all about all of them, but maybe they've also mentioned Tough Mudder by specific, just like you just did, where it really is like, you know, you get people that'll just kind of almost hang out at an obstacle for a while and just help as many people as they can before they move on to the next one, it seems like.
Yeah, and that's very, very true. I mean, the last time that I ran Tough Mudder, that's exactly what I did. I was at one of the courses. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'3". I've got, you know, really long reach and everything. So I was hanging down over one of the obstacles, putting my arm down to help other people who couldn't quite get to the top and help pulling them up so they can get to the ledge where they could then pull themselves up. And I probably hung out there for 20 minutes before I moved on to the next obstacle.
Right. With that in mind, and that, you know, almost self-sacrificial, even though, like you said, there's not an official time to it, so there's not really anything that, that you're specifically sacrificing, but that willingness to support other people, was that something that from day one of the OCR scene for you, or at least, you know, from those early experiences, that was something that you quickly gravitated to, or is that something that, that kind of took a few times of running it, maybe experiencing it, getting some help from other folks before you started to give back as well?
Right. Yeah. So it's the latter, not the former. The first two or three times I ran, I actually didn't try. I tried not to accept any help from anybody, and I didn't give any help to anybody. I was just out there trying to conquer the course myself. And then after I'd done a few of them, and I realized that's really not what this is about. I mean, yes, it's about me conquering the course, but it's also about me helping other people overcome their fears and conquer the course as well. And I started really noticing how many people actually stop and help other people. And it kind of hit me that, yeah, this is actually more what this community is about. And that's what I should start doing as well. So, and it's really enjoyable. I mean, you see somebody like I did a Spartan race with one of my friends who has some spinal issues, and to help her accomplish her goal, it was on her bucket list, was to complete a Spartan race. So to see, you know, see the look in her eyes when she crossed that finish line was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and it's I feel like it's one of those things where once you kind of do it that first time and you get that feeling of what it's like to help somebody else out. I get the sense from just talking to you for a few minutes here about this particular topic that there's almost no chance that you'd go back to doing it just strictly for yourself by yourself. Like it's all about that extended team mentality almost.
It is. It really is. And I look forward to, like, I have several friends that like to run OCR, just in a totally non-competitive way, and I look forward to doing the races with them because it gives me a chance to get out there and help them, and and then, you know, show them that, no, look, you know, when we're done with this obstacle, we should stick around for a minute or two and help these other people who are having trouble with it, or even, you know, even little stuff like just standing at the end of an obstacle and cheering someone on, going, come on, you can do it, you can do it. You mean it really helps foster a sense of accomplishment for people who are running the course, and it helps, you know, helps people realize that not everything has to be strictly competitive.
Right, right. What is the, you know, and it can be a ballpark if it, you know, because I know sometimes those courses aren't specifically measured, but about what's the longest OCR that you've done?
I did one that was done by the Warrior Dash people. It's called the Iron Warrior. It was 16 miles. And I had 55 obstacles.
Wow. Wow. Do you like it when it's jam packed with obstacles, or at this point being, you know, having a bit more miles on your feet, things like that? Do you kind of like being able to stretch it out and run a little bit more?
Yeah, I like being able to stretch it out and run a bit more. I like it. If I'm going to do a Spartan, I'll do the Spartan Super, which is the 10 to 12 mile, I think is that one. And there's usually like 30 or so obstacles. So I think that's a good mix of running and obstacles. Same with like Tough Mudder. It's usually between 8 and 12 miles, and there's usually like 25 to 35 obstacles. So, you know, having a, basically if you have like twice as many obstacles as there are miles on the course, I think that's a good ratio for me anyway.
Gotcha. If people are listening that are thinking about maybe you know, dabbling into an OCR type of scene, what are you know, a bit of advice or something maybe you learned the hard way, or a good place to start for somebody who's interested about maybe dipping their foot in the mud for the first time?
Yeah. Wear clothes that wick moisture away. The first time I ran, I just ran in a pair of basic workout shorts and a regular cotton t-shirt, and it weighed me down so much. So, you know, get the tech fabrics, and if you're going to do a mud run, wear older shoes that you don't really care so much about, and make sure that they don't slip off. Make sure you have them tied tight, because I've lost more than my fair share of shoes in mud.
Oof. Yeah, that'll change your race, no matter what your goals might be. You lose a shoe, that's going to slow things down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes the other piece of advice I also say, race as early in the morning as you possibly can. Because by the end of the day, the courses are so mucky And so all the obstacles are so covered in mud and water and slime from everything that it makes it really hard to hold on to anything. So if you can get into the earlier heats of the races, the obstacles aren't as torn up and the course isn't as torn up. So it's a little easier if you're just starting.
Is there a process to do that, or is it just you get there early, or how do you get into those earlier heats?
Most of the time you sign up for, the earliest wave you can. So if the first wave is at 8 o'clock, first open wave is at 8 o'clock. Obviously if you're just starting, you're not going to be in the competitive stuff. Right. So you try and sign up for the 8 o'clock. And typically what happens is, in a lot of them, if you sign up for the 8 o'clock and it gets overfull, they'll overflow you into the next one. So it'll be like the 8:20 heat. So Okay. Things like that. But, the earlier you sign up, the better chance you have for getting the earlier heats.
Gotcha. Again, kind of along the same lines of folks that might be thinking about giving something like this a shot, may or may not be me asking these questions for myself as well. But, when it comes to like preparing for, a 5K or a 10K or half marathon, like there's a dozen books out there. Shoot, I have one book out there helping people to do that type of thing. You know, what kind of workouts to do, training wise, running wise, building your base, yada, yada, yada. When it comes to getting into, let's say Tough Mudder, if that's going to be your first obstacle course race, and maybe you're somebody who has the running fitness, like that thing isn't that isn't what the concern is. That isn't what's holding you back. Where should you focus your training, or how should you train to help prepare for some of the various obstacles, whether it's the climbing over the walls, whether it's monkey bar types of things, whatever it is, the obstacles much better than I do. What are kind of the cross training, strength training things that, runners that maybe we are lacking on a little bit that we should pick up the focus on if we're going to do an OCR event?
Yeah, upper body strength is key. I mean, most of the obstacles, you're going to have to pull yourself up over something, or you're going to have to like swing across things. So you're going to have, shoulder strength. You're going to have upper arm strength, and you're going to have, just a lot of total upper body strength. Like, in the Tough Mudder, you've got, there's like a monkey bars or rings, depending on which course you get. There's always a rope that you have to use to climb up over a wall, or there's a ledge where you got to grab and pull yourself up, like pull up style. So do your pull ups and do your push ups and just all the stuff that really builds your upper body. That's the thing I found, the first probably 5 or 6 times I ran, I did not have nearly the body strength, the upper body strength that I needed to pull myself up over a lot of the obstacles. I mean, there's a lot of walls. You got to jump up, grab them, and pull yourself over. So, you got to be able to do just a lot of repetitive upper body work. That's the big thing. I mean, if you've got the running portion down, your legs will be fine for all the obstacles.
Right. Okay. okay. So then with that in mind, and then you kind of almost went back to what the first thing that came to my mind. So for you, when you first got started, you said you were still a pretty big dude. For folks that are listening that are maybe a bit bigger and really worried about upper body strength, how did you manage it in your early days before you had that strength built up and in combination with continuing to lose the weight to get to where you are today?
Right. So, when I did my first Warrior Dash, that one, the obstacles weren't too terrible. It wasn't really straining on the upper body. Like a moron, a week after that, when I had scheduled my first Tough Mudder, and that one, I was like, oh, I got through the Warrior Dash, no problem. This Tough Mudder is going to be easy, and I hit it, and it was hard. I mean, I'd been doing a lot of upper body training because I knew there's going to be stuff. So I'd gotten myself up to being able to do 2 or 3 pull-ups in a row, and I was doing a lot of shoulder presses and a lot of tricep presses and stuff, trying to get my arm strength up. But when it came down to it, when I got to an obstacle that I couldn't get over, 5 or 6 people would help lift me up to get me to where I needed to be, and then there were people at the top that would help pull you up. So I mean, and they don't like just pull you up and get you over the obstacle. They start pulling you up, and once you get to a point where you can get yourself up, then they're just encouraging you. They're not actually pulling you onto the obstacle. So doing the course actually helped me build up a lot of strength, and it helped me realize that okay, I need to focus more on being able to do pull-ups, or I need to focus more on my grip strength because I have to be able to hold on to these monkey bars and go across a body of water and things like that. I just do general cross training, you know, actually since I moved, I don't have a gym membership or weights anymore. So I'm doing all body weight training at the moment. I have a friend of mine who's a personal trainer who set up a regime for me just to maintain so I don't lose the strength that I've got.
And that stuff's effective. You know, that's the one thing that I feel like, especially runners, you know, that's one of the excuses that I hear a lot is, well, I would strength train, but I don't have that much time, or I don't have, I run because I don't want to have a gym membership or things like that. And like, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of body weight stuff, like you can get a pretty darn good workout in, you know, without any equipment, just at home. It's not as difficult as sometimes we make it out to be.
No, it's really not. I mean, you know, if you've got a dining room table, you can use that to help you do, you know, you can do like inverted rows and things like that. So you're hanging on the table and pulling yourself up, or you can use the chairs to help you do, you know, incline or decline push-ups and things like that. So, yeah, you don't need any real gym equipment. It's nice to have, sure, to be able to if you're looking to really build up massive amounts of muscle, but just to keep what you've got or to tone up, you don't need it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, just a little dig there for those that are listening that, are avoiding the strength training because of reasons. It's not that difficult. You just gotta make yourself do it. Rob, I want to slightly shift gear. Well, maybe not quite shift gears just yet, but first I just want to take a quick second and pay a couple of bills and thank today's sponsor. Diz Runs Radio is continued to be supported by the good folks over at DKMS, which is an international nonprofit that has been helping people battle blood cancer and blood disease for gosh, going on 28 years at this point. They've helped over 70 million people find a match for bone marrow, which is one of the big things that helps to fight the fight. And in so doing that, they're enabling them to do that. They've registered over 8 million potential donors, and that's something that you can do right now here today to help them help folks that are in need. You know, we all know somebody at some level of some form of cancer that's fought that fight and hopefully come through the other end okay. But obviously that doesn't always happen. And blood cancer to me is one of those cancers that I don't hear as much about until I started working with DKMS, until they started supporting the show. And then it's like, gosh, like, you know, there's so many people that need help, you know, that are fighting the disease, that are fighting the fight. And all it takes to possibly be a lifesaver for them is to just, you know, take a little cheek sample, cheek swab, and send it back to DKMS. They'll send you all the stuff, all the information. It's all postage paid. You swipe your cheeks, you send it back, you end up in the pool. And if you end up being a genetic match, you could be that lifesaver for somebody who's fighting blood cancer or another type of blood disorder. So to do that, to join me in the pool, head over to DKMS.org, get yourself the free swab kit, and all the information is there as well. And you can also text the word amazing, that's AMAZING, to 50555 to get more information and or to get yourself the kit and help potentially save a life. So thank you to DKMS for the support, and thank you guys who listen and have already done so for supporting the sponsors. It certainly helps to, you know, in this case, and it's much bigger than me, obviously. We're helping people. We're helping save lives potentially. So thank you for doing that. So Rob, you know, we've been talking a lot about OCRs of late, and it's a, hopefully, you know, made clear earlier, it's something I haven't done, but I have interest in. And I'm certainly not saying never say never on this. I've learned to never say never in any situation, but I'm open to the idea, but I'm curious to where you are these days. You know, OCRs are something you enjoy doing, something that you enjoy, you know, that I feel like if I had to pin it down, like that's your preference. But how much, you know, quote unquote, just regular running do you do these days? Do you do many straight running races, or are most of your races OCRs at this point?
Oh, no, I do. I actually, as of late, I've been doing a lot more just strict road racing and trail racing. I've cut it down to where I only do about 5 or 6 OCRs per season because, one, they've gotten to be ridiculously expensive. I mean, you know, when it's $120 to $200 to sign up for an OCR, and I can go and run a half marathon, you know, that's like, say, right now in Toronto, I can run a half marathon for $50.
So, yeah, you get 2 or 3 or 4 half marathons for the same price.
Right. So, you know, as a general rule, I run 5 days a week. So like I do a continual training plan. I'm constantly on like a half marathon training plan. So today was my short day. It's a 5K day. So I did 5K this morning. Tomorrow I'll do 8K Thursday. I'll do like a 10K, and then Saturday I'm doing another half marathon just out on my own running. But I've got next weekend I'm doing a 5K. The following weekend after that I'm doing a 10K race around here, and then the next really big important to me race that I'm doing is I'm actually going with a group of friends over to Edinburgh, Scotland, and we're doing the half marathon next May.
Oh wow, that'll be a fun trip. Have you done any? I mean, I guess international might be between U.S. and Canada. That's obviously technically international, but like a big overseas race, is this the first one of those, or have you done something like that before?
No, this will be the first one. So my wife and I are going over there, and we've got a couple friends that live in London who are coming over to do it. We've got a couple friends that live in Denmark that are coming over to run it, and we've got a bunch of our friends from the United States are going to meet. There's going to be like 15 or 20 of us that are all going to meet in Scotland and run this race together. So it's going to be something that's going to be fun. It's going to be one of those once in a lifetime deals for a lot of people who are coming. So.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be a blast. Is there a something particular about Edinburgh and Scotland that was the draw, or was it just anything in that area of the world that you were after, or why did you settle on that race particularly?
Because my wife and I decided we wanted to do a vacation where we were going to go to Scotland, we were going to go to Ireland, we were going to go to England, and then one of our one friend from London's like, well, there's this half marathon in Scotland that takes place. Why don't we see if we can get a group of people together? You can make it as part of your vacation. So that's actually what we're doing. We're starting with that. We're getting to Scotland like 2 days before the half marathon, do a little bit of touristy stuff. We're going to run the race. And then we're going to stick around for a couple of days after it. Then we're going to go to Ireland for, 3 or 4 days. And then we're going to go to London for 3 or 4 days. So it's just, we decided that would be a good race to run because we've got a few people who are over that are friends of ours that are over in that region. So for them, it's a quick trip there.
Right.
And then we've got some of our friends from the States who've always wanted to go run something in another country, and we're like, hey, we're doing this, so we've got a bunch of people who decided to do it with us.
That'll be a great time. I wonder what the differences will be just is in terms of race logistics just the atmosphere, things like that. Obviously you haven't experienced it yet, but I wonder what the compare and contrast will be like after you're over there and have done that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. So
yeah, for sure. So now shifting gears a little bit away from the running quite as much into maybe a little bit more of the gadgets and the tech and things like that that you're certainly again, at least according to Twitter, a bit of a fan of. When it comes to running tech, running gadgets, devices, all those types of things, how are you pretty much all in on those types of those fancy little electronics that a lot of us have and are pretty much all in on as well?
Yeah, my friends call me the technomancer when it comes to running. I have a Garmin Fenix 5X watch. I've got the Garmin FootPod on one shoe. I've got the Garmin Temperature Pod on another shoe. The headphones I wear are Aftershock, so they're bone conduction Bluetooth wireless headphones. And I always run with a phone for my music. Mm. So yeah, I'm pretty much wired no matter where I go.
Oh goodness. And I say that, but it's not like I'm that much different. I don't have all the FootPod stuff, but I've got the watch, I've got the heart rate monitor, I've got the headphones, I've got the phone. I'm right there with you. Do you ever purposefully go out without some of that stuff and kind of do one of those quote unquote naked runs where you leave all the technology behind and just go out and run, or would that be more painful than almost not running for you?
No, I do. There are times when I'll take my phone, but I won't be using it to listen to music, and it'll just be in mm-hmm. my bag in case in my pack in case of an emergency or something. But yeah, I'll go out and run. Or you also get those times where you forget to charge things, and halfway through a run, it turns into a naked run.
Yeah, the unintended one.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, no. 99% of the time, I'm running with my tech. But there are occasions like, getting away from running a little bit in my normal life, twice a year, I go hiking and camping with some buddies, and we always go to the Porcupine Mountains in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where there's no cell phone coverage. Mm-hmm. And we go there specifically because there's no cell phone coverage. So we leave all our tech gadgets in the cars. We just go and we camp and hike for a few days to get away from technology because we're surrounded by it, you know, every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get people that are like, well, just, you know, just don't use it. But yeah, when it's there and it's available and it works, it's functioning, like it's kind of tough to avoid it. But yeah, getting somewhere where things just don't work, like that's not a bad thing at all. Nice little break from the hustle and bustle of everyday normalcy, I guess.
Yeah, the abnormalcy that is normal.
Right. with all of the gadgets, I mean, you know, the Fenix is I don't know, about 50 levels of Garmin ahead of where I am, because it's just like, it's got all this great data, and I'm like, yeah, it would be kind of interesting stuff, but I don't know. Call me cheap, call me what you will, but it's like, yeah, you know what, I can use a mid-level Garmin. It works just for what I need. But you know, you got the foot pods, you got the Fenix, you got all the fancy stuff. What do you do with all that data?
I actually use it just to track, to see what my performance is. Like, I've discovered looking through all the data that I actually run about 10 to 15% faster and about 20% longer when the temperature is below 35 degrees Fahrenheit. I find that my sweet spot for running speed wise, for endurance, for me anyway, is running somewhere between 6.2 and 6.6 miles an hour at temperatures between 33 and 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, I've used it a lot to figure out what my optimal conditions are for running. So if I'm looking at, say, I'm going to do a half marathon and it's going to be a hilly course, it's going to be kind of challenging, I'm going to try and find something earlier in the year so that I'm at my optimum running parameters. So that I can perform my best. I mean, because I know that, you know, if it gets above 65 degrees Fahrenheit, I'm slowing way down because I sweat so much.
Right. Yeah. Don't come down here for a race anytime soon, because you know, if it gets below about 65 degrees Fahrenheit, people start to put their winter jackets on. And
yeah,
and
you guys get your woolly hats and, well, your parkas out. Yeah.
No, don't you guys us. I'm a Michigander at heart, especially when it comes to the weather. You know. So
how long have you lived in Florida?
Long enough that I say y'all and I have adopted some of the culture, but not long enough that I literally wear flip-flops every day, whereas, like I said, anytime it gets below 40 degrees down here, people put the boots on, the scarves, the mittens, the gloves, and I might have a sweatshirt on and still my shorts and my flip-flops. So, you know, don't lump me into this group too much.
All right, I'll let you slide.
Thank you. And you know, to all my Florida listeners, I'm kidding. Love you guys. Back to the data. So you found, obviously, you know, some of the conditions that work best for you. Try to use that as much as you can to plan your races, especially if it's a goal race, something you're trying to run faster. Do you ever get in that situation where it's almost, you know, data paralysis, like there's so much overwhelm or there's so many different data points, or have you pretty much locked in on, these are the ones that I'm most concerned about? The other ones, they're nice, but they're referenced, but they're not something that I get let you know, get in my way when it comes to analyzing that information.
That's exactly where it was. And to be honest, the only reason I even got the Fenix 5, the Fenix series watches to begin with at all, is because I do OCR and it's got the sapphire glass and it's a metal case, so it's a little tougher, you know, it can take getting beat up a little bit. It can take being, you know, crawling through mud and stuff. It's not going to get all scratched up and it's not going to get destroyed. I honestly didn't need everything. I mean, this watch does more stuff than I'll ever use.
Right.
But it's nice to have a watch that I know is rugged. But yeah, when I first started with this watch, all the analytics that it does is, you know, and then when you add in a foot pod and you add in the temperature pod and I have the other one, the dynamic running pod, the one that goes on your belt, you add all that data in, you start looking and you're like, what do I do with all this stuff? So then I started zeroing in on, okay, well, I know I want to see what temperatures do I run the fastest at, and what temperatures do I run the farthest at, what temperatures do I run the slowest at. And then, you know, I just started zeroing in on, okay, these are the things I really care about. Okay, if I'm going to be running a race and it's going to be 75 degrees out and it's going to be a flat course, I can know to expect I'll run about this fast. This is about what I should expect my performance. And if I really want to push it, I can try and beat this number, as opposed to, you know, beating myself up over a finish because, I think I was like 5 minutes slower this time. Well, if I go back and I look at the historical data, I'll be like, well, of course I was, because it was this set of parameters, you know. Mm-hmm. I know what to expect, and it helps me temper my own expectations.
Yeah. I've had a few times of conversations with folks where it's like, you know, like, just calm down. Let's focus on one or two variables at a time, one or two data points at a time, and we'll work on those. And you know, 9 times out of 10, other things are going to improve as well. So yeah, sometimes having the data is always great, but sometimes you gotta narrow your focus a little bit and only focus on one or two things, because man, it can get out of control if you're not careful.
It really can. It can cause that paralysis. Mm-hmm. Oh God, what do I do with all this information?
Right. If you could, you know, if I gave you the magic wand and you could, create the newest running gadget, running bit of technology or an improvement on something that's existing that you've experienced, and you're like, God, I wish, you know, this did that. What would be an improvement or a new bit of running tech that you would love to see happen sooner rather than later?
You know, with the current running tech that we have, I don't think there's anything I could think of that I need that's new, that's different than what I've got. But the one thing that everybody who deals with tech always wants, better battery life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I could get better battery life out of things, that would make my life so much better.
Yeah. I have yet to do the races that are long enough where you need to like switch watches in between. And I don't have any desire to do them anytime soon, but I know a few folks, some friends that do some of the longer races, and it's like, yep, you got to make sure you have a couple of watches charged, because you know, I know I can get to XYZ distance, you know, maybe 50-mile mark, but I better switch it out because I know it's not going to make it all the way to 100, and I need to have that you know, that the pace, and make sure I'm not going too fast, or make sure I'm moving fast enough to stay above the cutoffs, things like that, for that second half of the race. So yeah, a little bit better battery life. And you know, I will say that for my Apple AirPods, which are my go-to headphones, the battery life could certainly be an improvement there. So I'll totally second your recommendation there. So, Rob, as we're getting kind of to that point of wrapping up, before we get to that complete point, one other question. You know, you mentioned that, or at least I inferred, and if I'm wrong, please correct me. But you know, the recent move to Canada. How are things different? I mean, you know, I have a lot of Canadian friends and runners and clients and things like that, and I don't feel like things are that much different from the U.S. to Canada in terms of the running culture, running scene, things like that. But what is different? Have you noticed any differences yet from being in the States versus being in Canada? What the running culture is like there?
The running culture here is, I mean, it's running culture is running culture. I mean, runners tend to all be the same type of person. We're all out there to do our best, but to also encourage other people to do their best. And this is the same up here. I mean, we participate, my wife and I participate in Park Run. I don't know if you're familiar with Park Run. So it's a big worldwide organization where people put together parks every week at, you know, to put together runs at parks every week. So every Saturday we go down to this park. It's just a few minutes from here, and we run a 5K with a bunch of people. It's non-competitive, but you get people from all over, you know, people who are first timers, people who are walking, or people that do a little bit of walking, a little bit of running. And there's a big thing about it where people come from other places to run. So it's, you know, park run tourism. So like the last one we ran, there was four guys who were from London who'd come over, and they were running the park run here in Canada with us, just because, you know, okay, well, we've done them here, let's go do one here. So no, I mean, you know, the running culture is pretty much the same. And honestly, the culture from where I'm from the Midwest, moving to where I'm at in Canada, it's identical. Yeah. The only thing that's different is the color of the money and the cost of gasoline.
Yep. And I feel like, you know, from growing up in Michigan, like I said, and going to Canada, not super regularly, but the couple times a year that you would. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of difference from the Midwest to that, you know, kind of Ontario area around the United States. It's pretty similar. So I can agree with that. From my limited experience, you live there, obviously, so you got a better taste of it than I do. But as we're wrapping up now, Rob, the way I like to end the show is with what I call a philosophical question, which is kind of very similar to like the introductory question, something that's fairly simple, very much open-ended, and you can really take it whichever way you want to go with it. You can answer it short and sweet. We've had some of those. We've had folks that, you know, you take it, they take it and run with it, and somewhere 10 or 15 minutes later, they wrap up the answer. And a lot of people find somewhere in the happy medium between those two extremes. But all that to say, there's no expected length. There's no right way to answer these questions, or this last kind of question today. But I would just be curious, you know, at this point, in your life and certainly in the journey of losing a lot of weight and you know, I'm assuming even though we didn't get into it, you know, really feeling a lot better, gaining lots of health and just vibrancy and things like that. What does being a runner, whether it's OCRs, whether it's just road running, whatever it is, you know, what does being a runner mean to you? What do you want that to say about you when somebody's like, oh, there's Rob, he's a runner. What do you want that term of runner to represent?
You know, for me, being a runner is not like, it's not the races that I've done. It's not the medals that you get. It's not, you know, the PRs. For me, being a runner is being the person that is willing to get up and go do the exercise when other people are still asleep. It's, you know, having the drive to push yourself just a little bit farther than you would normally feel comfortable doing. If you get out there and you can only run for 5 minutes, and today you say, oh, I'm going to try and push myself and go for six. You know, you're a runner. You know, if you can run 50 feet and you have to walk 100 feet before you can run another 50 feet, you're still a runner. I mean, being a runner isn't defined by any one thing other than the fact that you try to run and you try to get out there and be the best you that you can be.
I love it and couldn't agree more. And as per usual, it's a great place to wrap things up. So I'm going to stay out of the way and not muddy that water at all. Once again, guys, if you want to check out what Rob's got going on, connect with him. Rowald.net, Rowald.net is the website. At The Urban Squatch, all over social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of the places, basically. Just search for The Urban Squatch. And we'll have everything linked up as we always do. Dizruns.com/621. We'll take you to the show notes and you can connect with Rob there. Pictures, all of the things that are always there. Dizruns.com/621 for today. So, Rob, thank you for taking the time today. And certainly, you know, always love hearing more about OCRs. And one of these days, you know,
you'll get out there.
One of these days is going to happen. You push me just a little bit closer. Just like every time I talked to an ultra runner for a while there, they pushed me a little bit closer and I finally took that plunge. And now, you know, one of these days I'm going to be taking the OCR plunge and you know, you're pushing me there. But thanks for taking the time. Thanks for the chat today. And certainly wishing you nothing but the best going forward. And when time comes, have a great trip to Scotland. What a great adventure that's going to be.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope you enjoyed the conversation between Rob and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was something that we talked about today that really sticks out in your mind or made you stop and think or made you maybe reconsider running your first OCR event? For me, the thing that stood out was once we got off of the OCR train a little bit, started talking about technology and data and all of that good stuff. And, you know, something that I've thought about for myself before, I've talked to folks about and something in the way that Rob was talking, it really just triggered for me the idea or the thing to maybe keep in mind is that, you know, having data is great, you know, can be very helpful, but don't let it be paralyzing. Don't let it be something that, you know, you're trying to correct every little thing, you know, talking about, you know, cadence or talking about oscillations or talking about whatever, some of the different metrics that some of the fancier things measure, the Phoenix may measure, maybe you have a foot pod, maybe you have whatever, a heart rate strap that measures some things. You know, there's all kinds of different variants and variables and things like that out there, you know, measuring cadence, measuring heart or VO2 max, measuring this, measuring that. And sometimes, and I've had this question from athletes that I work with, I've had this question from just local friends, or at least been parts of the conversations where it's like, oh, I need to optimize my cadence by 3 more steps, per minute because I'm only at 177, steps per minute. And, you know, the perfect cadence is 180. Slow down. When Rob was talking about finding the right temperature that works best for him, that is his best performance. Some people, that might be the same range that you're in. Other folks, you might like it a little bit warmer. You might like it a little cooler, you know? And it's the same thing with other measurements, other tracking devices, VO2 maxes, all these different things, these different data points that are out there, you got to find the right fit for you. You got to find the right cadence. You got to find the right this, the right that, the right, you know, just don't feel like you need to get all of your data points locked into the quote unquote perfect zone, because there is no perfect zone. That's a one size fits all measurement. And you all know where I stand when it comes to anything one size fits all. Not the biggest fan. So you got to find out what your zone is. What is your right zone? You can use those standard guidelines as a basis point, it's probably going to be somewhere near here, and it probably is. But, you know, speaking of cadence in particular, I know some great runners who have a cadence that are, you know, their race cadence is in the 160s. And, you know, you might be able to argue maybe they'd run a little bit faster if they took more steps, but now they're shortening their stride down. They've got a nice long loping stride, and it really works well for them. Don't tell me when they're finishing on the podium of 50-mile races, 100-mile races, things like that, marathons, whatever, that they should be changing things up just because some standard says that the cadence needs to be better. Don't tell me they need to change it up because their data isn't quite what the standard says. So just something to keep in mind. If you're looking at all the data and you're trying to go, well, God, like if I could just improve this a little bit or change this a little bit, it would put me, you know, I'm landing a little bit too heavy on one side and not heavy enough on the other side, things like that. Don't get too bogged down. Pick one or two variables, try to work on maybe improving those or shoring those up or finding your optimum zone there, and trust that things are going to improve in the other areas as well. Okay. So don't get paralyzed by the data. If you've got the fancy watches and the gadgets and the doodads and all of the things that measure all of the things, don't try to change them all at once. Don't try to manage everything. Take the information in and pick one or two things and try to work with it there. So that was my takeaway, a reminder for me that, you know, the couple things that I measure, namely heart rate, that's the biggest thing that I measure. That's enough. I keep improving that, keep improving my fitness so that my heart rate keeps going down, and as my speed maybe hopefully continues to increase at you know, the same level of exertion or lower, all of my other numbers are taking care of themselves. My cadence is maybe getting a little bit better. My stride length is maybe getting a little bit better. All those other things. But instead of trying to work on all of them at once, I'm focusing on heart rate, and that's it. So just a little coaching tip or a little bit of thought there. Take it for what it's worth. You know, you paid nothing for this episode, so if you don't like the advice, you're not out anything other than your time, I guess, to listen to it. And hopefully that was still considered time well spent, even if you disagree with what I have to say about the data. But what was your takeaway? That thing, there's always something. You always have something that you take away from each episode. I hope there is. And what was it for this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And, of course, you can head over to the show notes for this episode. Leave your thoughts and feedbacks and comments and takeaways and thoughts on data and anything else at DizRuns.com/621. And while you're there, you can connect with Rob. And you can also click right over to DKMS and get signed up to support them, to get yourself in the pool and potentially save a life. Thanks again to DKMS for their support. And once again, thank you guys for your support of the sponsors and specifically of DKMS, doing your difference, you know, doing what you can to make a difference and helping them make a much bigger difference, helping DKMS make a huge difference in the world of folks dealing with blood cancer and other blood disorders. So with that, let's put a bow on this thing for today. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this one. As always, any information, thoughts, feedbacks, takeaways are always appreciated. Let me know what you think. But until next time, please be well. Take care. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.